When I say susceptible to white supremacist propaganda, I don't mean they become prejudiced. The average white worker has prejudice against Negroes. Everybody knows that. It flows from the whole history of the land and the relations of people within the land. But the crime is in the fact that the union bureaucrats, and I mean starting with the very top echelons, are neither counteracting the white supremacist propaganda nor leading the kind of a fight that would both overcome the fears of the white workers and meet the just demands of the Negro workers. In short, serve the interests of the working class as a whole at the expense of the boss class, which is where the payment ought to come from. The hypocrisy of the union bureaucracy in their failure to really support the Freedom Now struggle as a whole on all fronts is another factor that touches on the problem of the working class today. Now looked at in the second aspect, parallel with these difficulties for the civil rights struggle because of the traitorous policies of the union bureaucrats is the impact of the Negro struggle on the union movement. Now, you know, Negro workers today, when I say Negro workers, let me just say parenthetically that I don't speak in the sense that only Negro workers are involved in the civil rights struggle. I don't say that middle class elements among the Negro people are not in their own way militant and becoming more militant in this battle. I use this expression in the sense of recognition that predominantly and their overwhelming majority, the Negro people as a whole, are of the working class. It's in that large sense that I'm now using the expression Negro workers, as well as particularly with regard to the presence of a Negro worker per se in a union. The Negro workers are of the same category as the workers that I described to you in 1934 that formed the battle detachments of the truck drivers that whipped the cops down in the market. And what is that? They're people that have got little or nothing to lose. And sometimes, you know, that can make quite a battler. That's one factor that's going to impinge in more and more ways in the movement. Moreover, the Negro worker, in addition to being a part of the general fight in this society as a whole for full social, economic, and political equality for minority peoples in all spheres of society, is making a fight for his rights on the job and within the union. And this will have its effects. As a matter of fact, it is becoming more and more the case, and it will be noted by more and more workers, I think in time, militants among the white workers, that in many respects the Negro movement is already fighting the battle of the white workers for economic security and, yes, if you please, for union democracy. And from another point of view, the mass action that is developing within the civil rights struggle is a highly contagious thing that is going to more and more find its reflexes in the union movement as a whole. And in this overall situation in which more and more instability is being generated within this surface appearance of stability in class relations between the workers and the bosses, the struggle of the Negro people will tend to serve as a catalyst to precipitate a new labor upsurge. And in doing so, it'll drive new and deeper fissures into the Labor Democratic Coalition and push the labor movement in the direction of the formation of an independent labor party. Now here, the labor movement is not as atomized today as it was in the 30s. It isn't necessary for the working class first to gather itself together at the first elementary form of organization, the union, as was required in the 1930s. The workers are not wholly organized. There's a lot of workers that could and should be in the unions that are not now in them. But there is ample organized union power at hand right here and now to become the tremendous central dynamo for projecting the working class and all the allies of the working class onto the political arena in its own name with its own party. And the basis is there then for a swift leap once the process starts beyond the framework of capitalist two-party politics to the formation of an independent labor party. Now, militants, revolutionary militants today are not in a position to summon the workers to this battle, saying to them, this is what is necessary and this is what you must do, now let's come and act. Much less to say in a position to try in any way, shape, or form to substitute some other force for it. Not yet in a position to challenge the bureaucrats for union leadership. The relation of forces as yet is a little too strongly against the militants. And we can't predict yet when the upsurge is coming. But come it will, that we can be certain. And the central theme of everything I have tried to communicate to you in these four talks, in terms of a piece of the actual struggle history of the working class, is to communicate that realization that not everything that you see is exactly what appears to meet the eye. Something is changing. Younger people who have never had a chance to see this class in motion will find in coming time that there's something there you couldn't have dreamed were present. And that once it starts to move, you are going to be not only an eyewitness to, but a part of what is going to be one of the most tremendous chapters that has ever been written in the history of the human race. There are two titanic powers in this world today that are central to the final showdown as to whether society on this planet is going to be driven back to barbarism under the rule of capitalism, the madmen with the nuclear bombs, or whether it's going to go forward to a socialist society. One of those powers at the center of the determining point is the ruling class of the United States of America. It is a power not because that power is inherent in the ruling class in the sense it's able to throw it around today. The ruling class is a power because it is able yet to manipulate the greater power, the power of the American working class, to its advantage. And until that brute force, the ruling class of the United States, as represented by its minions of the Republican and Democratic Party in Washington, are removed from power and replaced by the working class power, this world is going to face the danger of a nuclear holocaust, and the qualitative breakthrough of mankind to a world socialist society is going to be prevented. Therefore, in the last analysis, because of this fact, the ultimate fate of the human race is going to be definitively settled right here in the United States of America in a clash between the capitalist ruling class and the working class. And those of you here who are 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, I envy you. I envy you, because unless you get run over with a 10-ton truck,
you've got a very good chance of being a witness of and a participant in what is going to prove to be one of the greatest, the most triumphant chapters in the history of the whole human race. And meantime, in everything that you do, in trying to build toward the realization of the socialist cause, for all the reasons I have tried to state in these four talks, seek always in your thinking and in your action to point the way toward labor to power in the United States of America. Let that be the pole star by which you navigate.